You're listening to a Midori House US election special, first broadcast on election day itself, the 6th of November 2012, live from New York on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to New York for a Midori House Election Day special. Mitt Romney has been on the trail for 523 days. Barack Obama has held 101 campaign rallies. Some $6 billion has been spent. And it all comes down to this. Across America, 130 million voters will be pulling levers, pressing touchscreens or scanning ballots, all to cast their vote to elect the next president of the United States. I'm Steve Bloomfield, and over the next 60 minutes, we'll be bringing you the final moments of the 2012 campaign.
And I'm Aisha Spears. We'll have analysis from guests here in the studio in New York, and we'll also be crossing to Washington and Chicago. David Usborne, Adam Bolton, Pim Fox, and Xenia Dormandy are all standing by.
Our reporters have already been out and about this morning. We'll get a feeling for how the vote is taking place right here in New York, where the impact of Hurricane Sandy is still being felt.
We'll also be covering the international angle. As China prepares for its own leadership change later this month, we'll be in Shanghai to see what impact the US vote is likely to have on politics there.
American election always do this. Every year, the China topic is hot. But this year is much hotter. In the long term, I think it will be harder and harder for China and the United States to live together.
Then we'll be heading to the tiny Kenyan village of Kogelo, where Tristan McConnell is covering reaction in Barack Obama's ancestral home.
And with both campaigns with lawyers at the ready in Ohio and Florida, we'll hear the final installment of Sasha Eisenberg's Swing State Guide.
Democrats think that it is, more than any other state, a place where all the advertising that they did over the summer really resonates on sort of cultural terms with white working class voters with whom Obama has had a problem elsewhere.
It's time. America's voting. This is the Midori House Election Day Special, live from New York on Monocle 24.
But first, over to London to get the latest news headlines with Jonathan Wheatley.
Americans across the United States are indeed voting today in the 2012 presidential election, with opinion polls still showing President Obama and Mitt Romney in a dead heat. Barack Obama has a slight lead in several swing states. In one of those, Virginia, which traditionally votes Republican, he's ahead by just 1%. Hundreds of voters in the north of the state at Arlington queued for over an hour to cast their ballots. Yet many Virginians like Kim and Chris were proud that so many people had turned out.
I think it's important for people to feel like they have a chance to, you know, let their voice be heard, even if they may not win. They still get to know that they tried to make a difference.
I have no idea who people are voting for, but it certainly means that people are engaged, and it's certainly an important election at an important juncture in time. So people get that, and they're out here this morning.
Mitt Romney has now cast his vote in Belmont, Massachusetts. Romney supporter David Alba admitted it was unlikely Romney would win in his home state, which has traditionally been overwhelmingly Democrat.
Hopefully Belmont's excited for, you know, Mitt Romney. He's a local here. He lived here for many years. And so, but statewide, you know, it's going to be, it's probably going to be an interesting election, because hopefully it'll be an election where Mitt Romney comes out as president but loses his home state.
Many voters in New York State, especially in Manhattan and Staten Island, had to vote in tents, being forced to seek replacement polling stations after Hurricane Sandy's devastating effects left many buildings without power. For many voters like Larry Butler, the changes were an inconvenience and even confusing.
I came out about 8 o'clock, and unfortunately this is the third place I've been to this morning, because they changed our polling place, but we got bad information, and then I got online at the new place, and while we were standing on the line that went around the block, about 20 minutes later somebody came along the line and we were standing in the wrong place again, so now we came down here and found the right place.
Other news now, and Russia has today reaffirmed its support for the Palestinian bid to upgrade its status in the United Nations from observer entity to observer state, a move which has infuriated Israel because Palestinians want to become a non-member state based on the 1967 borders, with East Jerusalem as the capital. Sergei Lavrov is the Russian foreign minister.
For us, the statehood of Palestine is not questionable. I found it very important that President Abbas firmly reiterated that he is all in favor of resuming direct negotiations with Israel to discuss all final status issues in accordance with the existing international legal basis. And we fully support such approach. We fully support the resumption of direct negotiations.
An Egyptian schoolteacher has received a six-month suspended jail sentence today for cutting the hair of two 12-year-old girl pupils who were not wearing Islamic headscarves. Iman Abu Bakr Kelani, a science teacher who herself wears a full-length veil, said she'd been removed from the school in the southern town of Luxor after complaints by relatives of the girls. And finally, the closeness of the race for the White House has been reflected in popular sports superstition. Normally, if the Washington Redskins win their last game before Election Day, the incumbent will win. Since 1937, this rule has been borne out no less than 17 out of 18 times. But on Sunday, they lost, which is good news for Mitt Romney. However, in baseball, if a National League team wins the World Series, a Democrat usually wins the White House. Well, the NL's San Francisco Giants indeed triumphed over the AL's Detroit Tigers. Good news for Obama. Tall men do well, favouring Mitt Romney, but left-handed presidents, five of the last seven were left-handed, are more common, favouring Barack Obama, and the list goes on. Undoubtedly, it all points to a very close result this time. And those are the stories at the top of the hour here on Monocle 24.
Jonathan Wheatley, our alternative election expert. Thank you very much indeed. It's 18:06 in London. It's 13:06 here on the East Coast. It's Election Day. We're live from New York. This is Midori House.
London, New York, Tokyo. This is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. Tu vai Monocle 24.
Londres, Nova York, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo. Monocle 24 desu.
Londino, New York, Tokyo.
This is Monocle 24.
Here in New York, the election has of course been overshadowed by Superstorm Sandy, which claimed the lives of over 100 people, left tens of thousands homeless, and one week on, more than 1 million still without power. That hasn't stopped people heading to the polls, though.
I'm Deborah Konigsberger, and I'm here to vote for the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
What were the important issues for you in this campaign?
I need to be able to feel like I trust the person who's sitting in the White House. Trust, basically. Of course, the economy. You know, I'm a small businesswoman, so as a small business, it really matters to me. Health. I run a nonprofit that supports homeless moms and kids in shelters, and they're really poor and they don't have. So they should have the right to health care, just like everybody else. So I think those are my two big issues, and I like where Barack Obama's ideas are going regarding those issues.
Did you vote for him in 2008?
I absolutely did.
And do you think he's going to win this election?
With God's grace, he will.
My name's Tom Donegan, down on Houston and Avenue C, just trying to fill up some gas. I voted for Obama. My mom's a teacher, so Obama's support of public schools and teacher unions are something that are important for me. Romney's business background and obviously his time with Bain Capital was impressive. I can't say that I have an in-depth knowledge of the issues that he's flip-flopped on, but on the whole, I think Obama's been more consistent on what he says and what he does.
My name is Louis Huang, and I do some finance work here in New York City.
And can you tell me who you're going to vote for?
I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. I care about foreign policy. I think since we are the world economic power, we have a duty to look after interests, not only after our nation, but for the world as a whole. And I think Obama has a better vision for the world.
Janet Mason.
And who are you going to vote for?
Well, Mr. Barack Obama, the president.
Can you tell me why?
Because he's for all the people. He has fought hard and is still fighting for the people. And we would like to go forward with him.
My name is Linda Krull, and I'm waiting online to vote.
Who are you going to vote for?
I'd rather not say.
Pamela Walter, outside the voting booth in Greenwich Village, over on LaGuardia Place. I voted Obama. I think I agree with his policies. I think what we inherited from the previous, you know, regime, so to speak, was really so destructive. I do think that the Republicans had a very good campaign. I do think both sides are very destructive. What I really did not appreciate was that the Republicans just saying how bad this country is. And I actually think, you know, there's always a pro and con. And I think rather than saying the glass is half empty, it's better to say it's half full and to give people hope.
Hi, my name is Christina Simos, and I am standing in line in 40-degree weather to vote in Tudor City.
Can you tell me who you're going to vote for?
Yes, absolutely. I'm going Barack Obama all the way. For me, it's really a no-brainer because I'm gay and my fiancé and I cannot get married at a federal level, which actually has tons and tons of economic implications, and it's just an economic injustice issue.
And do you think he's going to win?
I sure hope so, or I'm moving to Canada.
She may well move to Canada, but she'll find Stephen Harper there, who's probably just as right-wing as Mitt Romney. Those were the voices of voters at various polling stations across Manhattan today. You also heard the voice of Pauline Eifman asking the questions. Perhaps no surprise there about who they are backing, but across the country in various states, the picture isn't quite so clear. To discuss this further, we're joined in the studio here by two guests. Zainia Dormandy is a US foreign policy expert at Chatham House, and Pim Fox, Bloomberg TV anchor and radio host. Zainia, Pim, welcome to both of you.
Always
great
a pleasure.
Pim, let's start with you. Before we get into some of the issues, tell us about your voting experience
today. Oh, my voting
today.
Day. Yeah, right. Well, you know, there are two big acts of citizenship going on this week. I'm going to tell you about the voting part of it. We'll get to the other stuff later. Long lines, right? A lot of long lines. I have never seen lines to vote like this in Midtown Manhattan. I've been doing this most of my adult life. And I got to say, the lines, they were long. Lots of new machines, right? I mean, we've been having all these problems with Chads, hanging Chads, leaning Chads, no Chads, Chad Taylor, I don't know, you know, Chuck Taylor. But we've got new machines. And these new machines mean that you've now got to fill out basically a little oval, right? And you fill out these little ovals, but they make you go behind a desk that has got little American flags pinned to it, and it's supposed to be private. But, you know, as in New York, after a while, people get a little tired of waiting in these big lines. So now they just fill out the forms while they're waiting in lines to put them into the new scanner machines. The problem is, these are new machines. The scanners broke down. There were a lot of lines. People are a little cranky. You know, this is our data kvetch and be cranky, but, you know, everyone was getting along pretty well. And I did get to bump into Tony Bennett, so that was a big thrill for me, and he looked as dazed as all of us were waiting in line.
Well, that's not too bad, is it? What's wrong with pen and paper? Pencil and paper? I know I've said this before.
You know, we were talking about this earlier. Okay, you know, we were doing this deal, right? You know, pen and paper, you think it's all so simple, right? Well, you know,
I
conjured up these images, you know, of those Soviet astronauts up in space in the Soyuz spaceship, you know, and they're using paper, and, you know, they're writing on, you know, pens and pencils. Right. In America, we don't do that. We invent the NASA anti-gravity pen. You're not going to, that's too simple. You know, pencil, paper, a little X mark. No, we've got boards of elections all over the country. I mean, you got to understand, this is a very local affair. So how individual boards of elections decide we're going to vote, that's who we're going to hand over the reins of power. And just to give you an idea, you know, when I showed up today, the way you do it is you got to give your address. You don't give your name and there's no identification. You give your address, they find a station that you're supposed to go to. You get in that line. Then you wait in that line, you get your little piece of paper, you show them your name, you sign a little piece of paper, and they give you another folder that has all of the names of Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, and all the other candidates, and you're supposed to go someplace else and fill that out. So now you're already in three lines. Well, those lines, of course, back up. It's like standing at a deli counter, and, you know, people say, no, I'm done with this, and then you get in a further line in order to drop your ballot in a box that doesn't work, and hopefully it all worked. I did it.
Process, isn't it?
It does seem a complicated process, but I'm really impressed that there are that many people lining up. On my way to the studio today, I saw people lining up around the block for a vote which a lot of people say doesn't matter.
Indeed.
Obviously, you're voting on local elections, so it's a great thing to see. Talking about the issues that people are actually going to be voting on, what do you think? What are you caring about the most? We've talked about healthcare, we've talked about women's vote, the economy still seems to be number one. Zainia, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think all of the polls bear out the fact that the economy is number one for most Americans, and it's probably number two, and it's number three, and it's number four, depending on how you define it, you know, social issues, etc. The economy is what most people are voting on. But I don't actually, you know, we talk about, well, GDP's up and unemployment's down, and, you know, we look at these kind of high-level numbers, and then we go by state and say, well, so-and-so state's got higher than the national average of unemployment. I actually think at some level, none of that matters. What really really matters is whether I, as housewife number three, does my husband have a job? And do I have a job? And does my neighbor have a job? And what does it mean in terms of the foreclosures along my street and therefore the value of my house? It is absolutely personal. And to the extent that the personal reflects the national, those two things are aligned with one another. But at some level, the personal doesn't reflect the national. I mean, they're too big of a difference. And at this point, it is, you know, and a number of the people who we heard quoted earlier on the show, you know, it's... what about me? It's a very, very, you know, I wish it were broader than that. I wish people, you know, my own proclivity is foreign policy. I can't help it. I wish people cared about foreign policy, but they just don't. Of course, final comment, that assumes you can split foreign and domestic policy, and you really can't. I mean, the minute you start talking about the economy, you have to start talking about China. Mm. You know, the minute you start talking about jobs and sending our soldiers overseas, you're talking about the Middle East, you're talking about Asia. You can't divide these, and yet we do it every time.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned personal, right? Because to me also, this is about voting for a person, right? The swing vote is the vote that is going to decide who is the next president of the United States. And you've got people who for their entire lives will vote Democrat. You've got people who for their entire family lives will vote Republican. I'm sure that this is similar to many places in Europe. You know, you have a tradition in a family and the areas, and this is what you do. Yet the swing voter, right, we call them the kind of the undecided. You can also call them the most disloyal, right, because they don't necessarily have – no, I mean, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, because those are the people that need to be convinced to swing one way or the other. And I believe there it is also – personal. It's about who do you connect with on a visceral level, whether it is President Barack Obama or whether it's Governor Mitt Romney. It is about the person. Americans tend to vote for people, not for parties.
We're going to pick up a little bit on China later on the show. For now, Xenia, Pim, thank you both very much. It's election day in the US. We're live from New York. You're listening to Midori House.
London, Tokyo, Hong Kong, New York, and Toronto. On October the 19th, Monocle opened the doors to its newest shop. Chock full of our regular goodies from Porter bags, Ettinger leather goods, 2013 Diaries by Marks, and Hakkisan ceramic wine cups. Check out all of our collaboration products or flip through the latest issues of the magazine. Find the perfect gifts for Christmas or just a treat for yourself. Visit us on College Street in Toronto or at our other shops around the world. And remember, you can sign up to our weekly bulletin at monocle.com to find out about all of the newest products as they hit the shelves.
This is the Midori House Election Special with Steve Bloomfield and Aisha Spears.
This is indeed the Midori House election special with Steve Bloomfield, which is not me, who is not me, and me, Aisha Spears. It's 1818 over in London, which means it's 1318 here in New York City, 1218 in Houston, and 1018 in San Francisco.
Barack Obama and Mitt Romney both got to do something last night that they haven't done for a very long time. They slept in their own beds. They're not the only ones grateful that this campaign is coming to an end. Journalists, too, can breathe a sigh of relief, although they might have to wait a little longer before they get to see their beds. Every day we've spoken to David Osborne. He's been in a different city, and today, it's no change. He's in Chicago for the Obama Victory Rally / Commiseration Fest, delete as applicable. David, your reflections on a rather long campaign.
Yes, it has been long. It's been a lot of... hopscotching across America. This is a very big country, as you know. Nobody is more exhausted than the candidates themselves, though, of course. But I can say that for the part of the journalists, I think we all woke up this morning here in Chicago thinking, well, the rallies are over, but we still have a double marathon to run. I think it's going to be a very long night here tonight where Mr. Obama will either deliver his victory speech or, who knows, just possibly a contestant speech.
David, 4 years ago, Obama spoke to hundreds of thousands gathered in Grant Park. It was an emotional occasion. Jesse Jackson even cried. Even if Obama wins, the atmosphere will be a little different tonight, won't it?
Of course it will. Yes, I was there at Grant Park also. Yes, I mean, it's been different all through this campaign, hasn't it? Because Mr. Obama has a record that has been fighting the rhetoric. You know, last time he could deliver his oratory, and we had nothing to measure it against, and this time we do. I think what's important tonight, though, is if he gets re-elected,
he's being re-elected because of his agenda, because of his record, and not just because of the thrill that we all felt 4 years ago of putting the first African American in the White House. If he doesn't get elected, well, we'll have the first Mormon president-elect.
Well, that's something, isn't it? David, when you talk to people on the Obama campaign, obviously you've got to know them over the last, well, not just this campaign, but on the previous ones.
Yeah.
Do you get the sense that any of them are just a little bit worried about what might happen today? The polls look very good for them. They sound very confident. They've got this excellent ground game. But are they, deep down, do you detect a slight level of anxiety?
Of course, yes, I do. They're not setting up to jinx anything. Some of them are now several days into beard growth because of superstition. They all decided they weren't going to shave until the last votes were in and their candidates had won. Look, they tell me over and over again that the polling in the states that matter, or in enough of the states that matter, is solid for them. They seem very certain about this, but of course that's the line they have to deliver to people like myself. I think privately they are anxious. I think they're anxious that it could be a long night. There could be legal squabbles if it's very, very close in a place like Ohio. But I think they are hopeful, but not fingering the champagne corks just yet.
David, has any one character from this campaign cycle really stood out to you in terms of just reflecting back on the whole process, either in terms of who we'll be talking about in 2016 or perhaps someone that you hope we never hear about again?
Well, the rock star of this campaign has been, and I think you know who I'm going to say, on the Democrat side, Bill Clinton. I mean, he has at times outshone Barack Obama. Barack Obama has not reached those levels of oratory that he did in 2008. I've never seen Bill Clinton campaign so effectively and campaign on behalf of someone else. And then, of course, you segue from the name Bill Clinton to Hillary Clinton, and I hardly dare say it, but we'll be speculating after today about 2016.
David Osborne in Chicago, good luck with your double marathon, and I'm sure we'll be speaking to you on tomorrow's Midori House when hopefully things are a bit more clear. We're going to go to Kenya in a moment, but before we do that, I just want to bring in Pim and Zania. Just on that issue of the rock stars of the campaign, is there anyone in particular that has really sort of caught your eye and surprised you, over the past few months?
I think for me, Nate Silver, who does all the polling in the New York Times.
So long as he's right, that is. So,
no comment. And the polling has been unbelievable. The ability to kind of merge all of the polls to get one. I will give another one, though, if we're talking about kind of real winners on the polling side, which is look at the betting agencies. I always think this is absolutely fascinating. You know, in the betting agencies, it's bettors who actually put money where their mouth is, as it were. And the numbers coming out of the betting agencies are actually not so different from Nate Silver's. So you know, there are going to be a lot of very unhappy people if he's wrong.
Pim, on that point, there does seem to be a slight change happening here in terms of how political journalism is conducted, in that you have people like the Nate Silvers who are, you know, if you like, statistician journalists. They're not saying, my gut says this, or I went to a rally and I got a feel for how it was. They're saying, well, look, I'm looking at the polls and numbers, and this is what it's telling us. Do you think that will have a broader impact on how we cover politics?
Yeah, it does. I think it already has already, because what you've seen is a proliferation of polls. The business of elections is now so big. You know, they have estimated they're going to spend $6 billion. When all is said and done, $6 billion. Now, that includes both, you know, the presidential elections as well as Senate and Congress and ballot initiatives. I mean, we've got a lot of stuff going on all over the United States today, but we're talking about $6 billion, and that includes ads and pollsters. You can basically get a poll to say anything you want, and then the issue is, does the poll influence the writing of the story, which then influences the public, because then they end up believing what the polls are already saying.
Pim, Zania, thank you very much. There is, of course, another part of the world which sees itself as Obama's home, not just Chicago, and that is Kenya. It's the land of his father, and as we heard yesterday, many of his relatives still live in the tiny village of Kogelo in western Kenya. Tristan McConnell is there for us today. Tristan, what's the atmosphere like in Kogelo? Oh, we seem to have lost Tristan there. Don't worry, we'll go back to him. Zania, you had one other point you wanted to make there.
I did, which is to say there's also the losers. And to me, the losers are the fact checkers. There was about 2 months ago a story that was talking about, you know, all of the rhetoric that we've seen in the ads and how so much of it is inaccurate. And I saw one story that came out saying the fact checkers are out there and hopefully they're going to influence and stop people from essentially telling lies in ads. And then that story sunk. And the fact checkers, you know, I have enormous respect for
them. Yeah, but a campaign wouldn't be any fun without the lies and innuendos and mudslinging that goes on. We have a long and rich tradition of dragging people through the mud and then anointing them to high office.
Talking about mud, I think we have some... we have some literal mud in Kugela where apparently it's pouring with rain, or certainly has been. Tristan, you're there, yeah?
I am, yes. Steve, you know Kenya well. You used to live here yourself. So the rain rolled in a couple of hours ago and the power went out. So we've all been sitting in the dark for the last couple of hours. But about 10 minutes ago, the electricity came back, and so the flat-screen tellies that they've set up underneath some waterproof awning here are back on, and you know, the crowds are beginning to gather to watch the voting underway. But what I've really noticed is that the excitement that's here is not really comparable to what we saw at the election 4 years ago. There's a kind of reticence, and that's partly, I think, due to the closeness that the polls you've been talking about have shown between Romney and Obama. But it's also, I think, it points to a slight disappointment in Kenya and perhaps in Africa more broadly with the Obama presidency. People expected that... they get kind of special treatment from Obama because of his African roots, and that hasn't really happened. I mean, policy hasn't really focused on Africa that heavily, and he hasn't even visited. And there's been a lot of disappointment about that. A lot of people here, even in his family's home village in Kugelo, are grumbling a little bit that Obama never came to see us. Why doesn't he show us a bit more love? And I think that's kind of the theme of what's happening here at the moment.
It's not just that he hasn't visited. He's also, when he has talked about Kenya, he's been very critical, hasn't he? When people look back on what the Obama presidency has done for Kenya, do you suspect that some people might think, actually this wasn't so good for us after all?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got a point there, but Kenyans are very aware of the problems in their own political system. So when Obama criticizes Kenya's leaders, your average Kenyan agrees with him. And, what people have been telling me today is that, they're going to watch the American election because it's an example of how democracy can actually work, without violence. The last time round in Kenya, there was horrendous violence following a close election. Now, this one in America, at least from here, looks neck and neck. And no one expects a kind of violent reaction to that, which is kind of par for the course here in Kenya and in many other countries in Africa. And so they're looking at the American election as an example of how one can actually do democracy properly. And I think that's a very positive thing.
Tristan McConnell in Kugelo, I hope the rain stops and the power stays on and you have a good night. Say hello to Mama Sarah if you see her from me. Zania, that point from Tristan about what the American election shows the rest of the world is, I think, quite an important one, isn't it? And let's see what happens in Ohio and Florida and maybe even Colorado. But do you get the sense this is, if it works well, it's American soft power at its best?
Both the positive and the negative side. I mean, the one hand is, there are so many voices. There's a cacophony of voices. The openness, the transparency is incredible. And I think the outside world sees that and sees that a vote does matter. On the other hand, they also see what we were talking about earlier, the kind of media, the polling that is moving people in certain directions. They also see the money behind it that is, in the views of some, making it more democratic, in the views of others, making it less democratic. And, so if we get what many people are now talking about, which is a disparity, say Obama wins the Electoral College and Romney wins the popular vote, then you have to ask yourself, is this actually a positive message to be sending the rest of the world? You know, I remember back in 2000, I was living in Boston at the time. And, you know, I mean, it was absolutely hysterical, some of the emails that were flying around, you know, about would you ever accept, you know, from countries in Africa, would you ever accept, you know, from us that we ignore the popular vote? And the answer is no, of course not. We would be outraged by that. And yet that might come to pass here.
I think it's definitely something we should be talking about a little later on, especially the super PAC power that we've seen this election cycle, which is somewhat terrifying. Thank you very much. Both of you will be speaking more about a lot of these issues later on. You're listening to Midori House, the Election Day Special.
London, New York, Tokyo. This is Monocle 24.
London, New York, Tokyo. Това е Monocle 24.
Londres, Nova York, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo.
London, New York, Tokyo. Monocle 24 です.
Londino, New York, Tokyo.
This is Monocle 24.
In the next half hour of the programme, we'll be asking what the election means to the citizens of China. We'll be discussing the final hours of the race with our two guests, and we'll enjoy the final instalment of Sasha Eisenberg's Guide to the Swing States.
Democrats think that it is, more than any other state, a place where all the advertising that they did over the summer really resonates on sort of cultural terms with white working class voters with whom Obama has had a problem elsewhere.
But first, back in London, here's Jonathan with the headlines.
Thank you very much. Americans across the United States are indeed voting today in the 2012 presidential election, with opinion polls still showing President Obama and Mitt Romney in a dead heat. Barack Obama has a slight lead in some of those swing states. Many voters in New York State, especially in the Manhattan and Staten Island areas, had to vote in tents, being forced to seek replacement polling stations after Hurricane Sandy's devastating effects left many buildings there without power. Other news now. Russia has today reaffirmed its support for the Palestinian bid to upgrade its status in the United Nations from observer entity to observer state, a move which has infuriated Israel because Palestinians want to become a non-member state based on the 1967 borders with East Jerusalem as the capital. And an Egyptian schoolteacher has received a 6-month suspended jail sentence today for cutting the hair of two 12-year-old girl pupils who were not wearing Islamic headscarves. Iman Abu Bakr Kalani said she had been removed from the school in the southern town of Luxor after complaints by relatives of the girls. And those are the stories for the moment here on Monocle 24.
Jonathan, thank you very much indeed. This is Midori House on Monocle 24. We're in New York City, where the countdown to the presidential election has finally ended. It's polling day here on our special edition of Midori House.
And while the United States votes, China is also heading into a week of big leadership decisions. On Thursday, China kicks off its party congress, which will name a new president. Unlike the United States, of course, China's president is chosen by the Communist Party. But as Ruth Morris reports, many Chinese are watching the US elections just as carefully as their own political process.
Outside the US consulate in Shanghai, people mill around clutching documents in transparent folders. They're waiting for their turn to apply for visas so they can study or invest or just go shopping in the United States. Some say they haven't been paying attention to the U.S. elections, but others, especially young professionals, say,
I watch a lot, actually, yeah.
Asked if they like one candidate more than the other, some were thoughtful.
Normally you tend to think that Obama will be more friendly to China, but you know, I also work in the financial industry, so from that perspective, I also wish Romney to win.
Other answers were more heartfelt.
Actually, I support Obama. I think he's handsome or something. I love him.
Michelle Ching says she's been following the elections because she has more and more friends studying in the United States. The number of Chinese undergraduate students at U.S. universities is skyrocketing. Their numbers doubled over the last 2 years. So the United States simply feels closer. Nicholas Wang says he's also been watching the race closely. He says he likes Obama's family man persona. China's top tier officials are famously straight laced. They almost never appear with their wives and children in tow. Wang brought up another point, one that's making the rounds on China's microblogging sites. Young Chinese increasingly turn to the internet for news, and they can now catch the presidential debates online. So many were watching when Obama touched a sore spot in China. He was referencing his initiative to reassert U.S. influence in China's backyard, the so-called pivot to Asia.
And we believe China can be a partner, but we're also sending a very clear signal that America is a Pacific power, that we are going to have a presence there.
But the real stinger came from Mitt Romney.
That's why on day one I will label them a currency manipulator, which allows us to apply tariffs where they're taking jobs. They're stealing our intellectual property, our patents, our designs, our technology, hacking into our computers.
Romney lashed out at China, in part for keeping the RMB at levels he considers artificially low to kill competition. China's netizens fired back. Many feel both candidates have been scapegoating China rather than face up to self-inflicted economic problems. Wei Xiong is a trader in Shanghai. He's applying for a tourist visa. He shrugs off the currency manipulator talk. In fact, state-run media have pretty much shrugged it off, too.
Well, I think it's understandable. It's just like the electional bluff. Don't buy too much into that. But of course, I think the risk of trade war is on the rise.
It's okay. It's normal. American election always do this. Every year, the China topic is hot. But this year is much hotter. In the long term, I think it will be harder and harder for China and the United States to live together.
Professor Gua Shui-Tang teaches international relations at the Shanghai Institute of Foreign Trade. Over coffee, he told me Romney and Obama are igniting dangerous anti-China sentiment in their campaigns. No matter who wins, he says, the next president will be under pressure to take a harder stance against the world's number two economy, especially on trade. And he says typically the first 2 years of any administration are bumpy for China-U.S. relations.
I think they're trying to think about China, because China is changing too much. The first 2 years, they make wrong policies, or even China make wrong responses. You know, the first 2 years, they're very hard.
Hua says most Chinese observers are angry over Obama's pivot to Asia. A recent poll by the Pew Global Attitudes Project found about 40% of Chinese described the U.S.-China relationship as cooperative. That's down sharply from about 70% 2 years ago. Obama is less popular, too. On a final note, Gua says China's young people are not just watching the elections. They're watching the election process, and especially the debates.
Thanks to the technology, everybody actually can reach the internet and get the information about the debates. So this is amazing, you know. And Chinese young generation, many, you can see that they admire that very much. That so we China should have this kind of democratic means, you know, to talk. Let people talk about this. So I think the more and more people think it is good. To be also China should do this.
Back at the consulate, I ask Wei, the trader, if he sees a day when the Chinese will vote for their president. He echoes a common sentiment here.
Yeah, of course I care about that, but I think right now is not the right time. Because I think most of the Chinese citizens, they still need to be more educated. They have to be more like rational with a more visionary. At this time, I don't think the normal citizens have that capability.
Within days, China will also name a new president, Xi Jinping. No suspense here. He's already been chosen and anointed behind closed doors. For Monocle in Shanghai, I'm Ruth Morris.
That was indeed Ruth Morris telling us what the Chinese think of what is going to happen tonight in the US. Pim, something I want to talk to you about is more than once Romney has said that if he entered the presidential office, he would declare China to be a currency manipulator,
right,
which
yeah.
could lead to somewhat of a trade war and possibly put some large American companies in a tricky situation. What do you think about that?
I think it's politics. I think it doesn't really matter. I think that this is used for the campaign trail because every American business person knows that there are certain things that are going to be made in China almost forever because it's a lot less expensive. And if you happen to be GM, you're selling cars in China. If you're a Caterpillar, you're selling tractors in China. So, you know, you can say a lot of things on the campaign trail, but then if and when you do become president, you have to sit down across the table from a trade negotiator. You can not necessarily afford to take those strident opinions when you've got millions of jobs on the line.
Zainia, we've been talking about the differences between China and America, but there are some similarities with how they choose their leaders, aren't there?
There are. I mean, I think it's, you know, this is perhaps a little bit controversial, but actually there are a fair number of commonalities if you look at the two systems that are fairly stark, given that we're both going through at the same time. The first one is money. I mean, as we saw over this year, you know, both the New York Times piece on Wen Jiabao, the Bo Xilai, I mean, there's a lot of money behind this and power. The question of uncertainty, you know, we say that the Chinese system is guaranteed, but what we've seen this year has been an awful lot of uncertainty right up until the last few weeks. The factions, again, I mean, you know, we talk about, well, whoever wins today is going to have to deal with a Congress and a Senate, and what's that going to look like, and how are they going to manage the various factions? Exactly the same set of scenarios going on in China at the moment, and how will the military versus the party versus the administration, et cetera, play out? And then, you know, back to what Pim was saying, the rhetoric, the politics. I mean, the amount of nationalism in China and in the United States has been enormous, and that's what they have to do.
Yeah, but I just got to say, I'm going to do something very un-Chinese. I'm going to disagree. And I'm going to say,
do it briefly.
Yeah, I just don't think that the U.S. electoral system and the way that we work out our elections has anything to do with the way that China's organized. But
absolutely,
that's small.
Okay, we'll leave it there for now. Let's head now to the U.S. capital, Washington, D.C., where Adam Bolton, political editor for Sky News, is standing by. Adam, political pundits often claim there's little difference between the two candidates, but that can't really be said this time, can it? They both have very different views on the role of government. If one wins decisively, what will that tell us about America's political direction?
Well, if one wins decisively, they'll probably tell us that the opinion pollsters have got it all wrong, in the sense that we know this is going to be a very close election. We don't expect, for example, Barack Obama, if he is elected, to win as strongly as he was first elected 4 years ago, because of the level of electoral excitement there was then, and also the disenchantment after 8 years of George W. Bush. Now, if there's disenchantment, it's disenchantment with 4 years of Barack Obama in what everyone accepts have been very difficult times for most Americans. On the other hand, if Mitt Romney wins big this evening, that really will be an enormous shock, even to those on the conservative right who are still busy insisting that Republicans and independents are much more prone to turn out for Romney today than Democrats or independents are for Obama. If Romney were to win very strongly, I think it would be a very firm signal that the idea of big government paid for by general taxation is one that has been pretty comprehensively rejected by the American people. But I don't think that's going to happen.
Adam, can you paint the picture of what it's like in Washington, D.C. a little bit today, apart from obviously not the presidential candidates, but a lot of people must be just sitting there awaiting their fate? Is it just business as usual?
Well, there is something quite funny about this election, which is that in 34 states, including the District of Columbia, which does have 3 electoral votes out of the 538, the polls have been open for some days. And so in that sense, it's almost a sense of election business as usual. But I have, having been in this country for elections back to 1980, I think, this is certainly the one where there's the most tension in the air, where people are less confident than they normally are about predicting the outcome. As Senator John McCain himself admits, this time 4 years ago, he was pretty much convinced that he wasn't going to win and therefore was already thinking about putting a brave face on it, whereas we've seen Mitt Romney today certainly not giving any of those sort of signals. Instead, he's been out campaigning in Ohio and also in Pennsylvania, which has come as a shock to most people, that he thinks it's even worth campaigning in Pennsylvania, that in recent years has gone pretty consistently to the Democrats.
Adam Bolton in Washington, D.C. Thank you very much. That was Adam Bolton, political editor for Sky News. You're listening to a U.S. election special, Midori House. We'll be right back after this with Sasha's final guide to the swing states, Ohio and Florida.
Wherever you're going this autumn, and whether it's for work or play, let Monocle's editors be your travel companions.
We've just refreshed and revised our team's guides to the world's top business cities and resorts. So you can have our 2525 travel guide series in the palm of your hand with the Monocle app available from iTunes or download free guides from monocle.com. From São Paulo to New York, Capri to St. Barts, we can show you where to long lunch or go for your morning run. Just go to the iTunes App Store and download the Monocle app. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
You're listening to Monocle 24, broadcasting from Midori House at 1 Dorset Street, London, W1. Monocle 24 is a wholly owned subsidiary of Wing Content and is edited by Tyler Brulé and Andrew Tuck. With bureaus in Tokyo, Hong Kong, Zurich and New York, Monocle 24 has over 50 editors and correspondents filing for us around the clock. If you have any editorial, distribution or advertising queries, please email us at info@monocle.com. Monocle, keeping an eye and an ear on the world.
This is the Midori House election special with Steve Bloomfield and Aisha Spears.
This is not only the election special, it's the election day special. People are lining up at the polls in New York. Pim, I want to talk to you a little bit. Both of us were here for Hurricane Sandy. And there are
you
a lot
survived.
Of, I did survive,
all right, good.
As did you, clearly. And yes. There are lots of other lines going on around the city.
There are. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, one of the few places that you actually meet your neighbors, you know, being in New York, of course, you can get into elevators and live next door to someone and never speak to them for the next 50 years. But you do tend to meet your neighbor in a polling line, right? Okay, so that can be good and bad. The other place that you meet your neighbor is when your neighbor has something catastrophic happen. And, of course, Hurricane Sandy has been a catastrophe all over the eastern seaboard of the United States. And I just would offer that the competing images that you're going to have for this election, and one image that's going to last a lot longer than the actual election, are lines of people getting involved as volunteers to help their neighbors rebuild their lives. Because we're talking about food, clothing, money, shelter, diapers, everything you can possibly imagine, from toys to chewing gum. People have lost their entire lives in their homes and their ability to get to and from work. And I just think that, you know, acts of citizenship and neighborliness, not to be too cynical about it all, because elections can bring out the best and the worst in all of us. I think that the pictures of people helping each other just because they want to is going to be something that is going to be longstanding.
Let's assume that the result is clear tonight. And it's a big assumption, I accept, but you know, let's assume that by this time tomorrow, we know everything, it's all sorted. Does then the big story return to just being the aftermath of Sandy? And also, you know, some of the questions that really haven't been asked about, you know, was New York prepared enough? Should rebuilding be done on the Jersey Shore? Things like that.
You know, the answer to that is maybe yes, yes, and yes. But I think the issue is going to be, how do we pay for everything? I don't care whether it's rebuilding after Sandy or whether it's the fiscal cliff or whether it's the U.S. deficit. Whoever ends up at 1600 Pennsylvania by tomorrow night is going to have to face the same issues. And it's all about, how much money do we have, where are we going to spend it, and what's it going to mean for us?
The only thing I would say is, you mentioned earlier, $6 billion spent on this election. I've got an idea.
And times that by 10, which is the cost of just for New York City, sadly. Yeah.
Okay, let's turn to Sasha now. And the one sad thing about Sasha's final installment to Swing State Guides is going to be Ohio and Florida. The one sad thing is we never get to hear this music again. It's a shame, isn't it?
You guys, maybe Tony Bennett should have really listened to this one, because it's definitely the swing states.
Yeah, here's Sasha and his guide.
I'm Sasha Eisenberg, and here's Monocle's guide to the swing states.
Sasha, let's look at the two swingiest of the swing states, Ohio and Florida. Let's start with Florida first. Everyone will remember what happened in 2000. It's unlikely to be quite as tight this time, though, is it?
No, and it seems to be drifting a little towards the Republican column in the last couple of weeks. Still, though, it's a state Obama won, and won, like many states, pretty comfortably. But it's also a state that has suffered perhaps more under the recession than any other large state. The real estate market in Florida, which is sustained in many places by speculators who are buying investment properties, has tanked. You have huge foreclosure rates, and a lot of the economy that was based around real estate or based around tourism has suffered as the sort of broader economy has suffered. And so it's a place where I think Romney thinks that it's very easy to convince voters that Obama's 4 years have been a failure on sort of economic issues alone. And that's sort of at the core of the messaging that they've used there since the primaries.
Is it fair to say that it's a state that's become, it certainly looks from a distance, if it's become a bit more right wing over the last 4 years? You know, 4 years ago, you had as governor Charlie Crist, who was being talked about as a possible VP candidate for John McCain. He eventually left the Republican Party, stood as an independent, has now backed Obama, whereas the Republicans in charge there now are more of the Tea Party mindset, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, many states sort of went through a version of that correction in 2010, but Florida is, as people like to say, several different states in one. And the way that Republicans can win with conservative candidates is that the Panhandle, which is in many places very rural and acts like the rest of the South, the sort of northern tier of Florida, combined with large military communities who are traditionally conservative around Jacksonville. And then you have pretty upscale, sort of business-minded electorate in places in South Florida on the West Coast. And so that's the sort of path for a Romney to win in the same way that it was for Scott in 2010. And I think that they'll be hoping that same sort of anger against the status quo that sustained Scott's election and helped Marco Rubio win that primary against Charlie Crist will be there in the form of sort of anti-Obama energy.
Let's end with Ohio, a state that is always talked about as being the key swing state, even if actually the myth doesn't always match the reality. It could be this year, though, couldn't it?
I could. You know, it's very hard to see how Romney gets to 270 electoral votes without winning Ohio. He basically has to win every other state that we've talked about this week. And the fact is that Ohio has been a place where Obama has maintained a significant advantage, several points consistently, even as he dipped a little after that first debate. And so, you know, there's a real sort of class character to Ohio, where the white vote there is still very working class, relatively unionized, and Democrats think that it is more than any other state a place where all the advertising that they did over the summer attacking Romney for Bain Capital, for outsourcing, for the taxes that he pays, for his offshore bank accounts, really resonates on in sort of cultural terms with white working class voters with whom Obama has had a problem elsewhere. And sort of painting Romney as weird corporate dude offers some benefits there that they don't think it necessarily does. And let's say a state like Colorado or New Hampshire that's a little more upscale and has a little more of a 21st century economy. And Ohio, in certain respects, looks like Michigan. It has a large car industry, especially parts dealers, suppliers, manufacturers. And so Romney, I think, is really being hurt there by the sort of both his particular position on the against the auto bailout, but also the sort of caricature of him as this rapacious capitalist who believes in outsourcing.
That was Sasha Eisenberg talking us through Florida and Ohio, two states which have been in the news constantly here in the US. Pim, one of the only things that Obama and Romney do share is they went to the same law school, and some fellow lawyers might be heading to both either Ohio or Florida soon. What are your thoughts?
The market for Harvard Law School graduates is pretty good. Both parties have lined up all of their lawyers in all of the swing states, as you just described, and there might be a lot of legal challenges, and there is there's no unifying election code in the United States. So you've got the situation where the laws about automatic recounts, automatic, mind you, are different in each state. You know, in Florida, they have to be done with a certain time. In Ohio, it might take a lot longer. So we might not know who is the next president of the United States until we get done with all the lawyers and, of course, you know, billable hours. That's not a bad thing if you're a lawyer.
We talked yesterday when Sasha was here about the fact that some of the quirks, like, for example, in Ohio, provisional ballots aren't counted for 10 days.
Exactly.
So you have, there could be 200,000, maybe 300,000. The margin of victory last time there was 260,000. So we might not know.
The margin of victory in Florida in the Bush, you know, Gore, it was 527 votes out of 6 million cast.
And that doesn't even include the ones they didn't count.
Named Chad. Or,
yes, exactly.
Right. Or the ones that were votes for Pat Buchanan instead. Zainu, when you look at the fact that this could end with lawyers Does that kind of make your heart sink? No offense to any lawyers, but this isn't really what it's supposed to be about, is it?
It isn't, but it does. I mean, you know, here I'm going to be glass half full for a second, just for the hell of it.
We can do that.
You know, it does tell you how much people actually care about this. I mean, how important, you know, people aren't going to give up. There's not a sense that, we can get on with doing our business anyway. It doesn't really matter so much. And there's something to be said for, you know, I'm now going to sound really perhaps off color for somebody who grew up in England.
Oh, go ahead. Be new world for us.
You know, there's something to be said for this just incredible, like, fundamental sense that it matters. And that you've got to get out there and you've got to keep plugging away until you get the right answer and the truth. And the belief that at some level, and again, I'm now looking in a rosy colored, you know, that the truth is out there and that you can achieve it. And, you know, that's...
But isn't that Churchill quote? You're supposed to say it. You guys got the accent. I mean, the Churchill quote is, you know, Americans will eventually do the right thing after they've
exhausted... done everything wrong.
Right, after you know? Exhaust everything
And democracy
else.
Is the best system.
Right, well,
and, you know,
it's about
once you've been through all the
other stuff. It's about the least awful choice, and we just keep plugging away.
And at least it is with lawyers rather than, as Tristan alluded to earlier, with violence in Kenya. I must say, one of the things about covering elections in Africa that I could never get used to was hearing someone say, oh yeah, I lost my brother during the election, as if somehow elections and violence went together. Let's just, while we've still got 2 or 3 minutes to go, look ahead to tomorrow. And again, the assumption, lawyers, let's ignore the lawyers, that there is a victor. Then it'll be the turn of the excuses. Zainia, what are the excuses that we're likely to hear? The reasons, let's be fair, the reasons why campaigns will say their guy lost.
I'll actually give you the excuses. Okay. Absolutely guaranteed the Republicans, if they lose, will say it was Hurricane Sandy. You know, that we had it until Hurricane Sandy.
Chris Christie's fault.
Chris Christie's fault, quite possibly. And the Democrats, if they lose, will put it all down to the first debate, which I actually think is kind of sad. The fact that neither side will actually face up to the fact that maybe they lost because people didn't like their policy. Maybe we need to rethink the direction that we as a party are going. What I hear from my moderate Republican friends are their greatest fear is that if Romney loses, the Republican Party will go even further right. And then what will that do for American politics and you know, the American dysfunction?
Although, as David Frum was saying a couple of days ago, if you really think it's because that you weren't conservative enough, do you think if you'd stood up and said tax cuts for the rich and let's cut Medicare, then it would have been any better?
Indeed, yeah, I think that that's exactly right. I think also that one of the things that's going to happen is you will see at least a brief unifying moment. I mean, it might happen, it might be a millisecond, and if you look away, you might forget to see it kind of jet across the sky. But I do think that there will be a time when people all kind of drop the veil and say, we've got to figure out how to solve some of the biggest problems that we're ever going to face.
I do hope that there's going to be. I know.
That's
shaking
all right.
Head.
I know.
We've had a little.
I'm feeling the negative wave.
Glimpse of optimism. But do you think that in 2016 we're going to see the same arguments, the same super PAC ads, the same Donald Trump figures that we saw this
He'll
time
have
around?
The same amount of hair. That's for sure.
Actually, watch. It's not 2016. Watch 2014. That's going to be the really interesting one to see.
Okay, we will be here for 2014, I'm sure, as well. But for now, Zainia Dormandy and Pim Fox, thank you both very much. That is it for this Election Day special, Midori House.
Our production team here at Argo Studios in New York was Katie Bilboa, Paul Ruest, Barrett Austin and Pauline Eiferman.
Election coverage continues throughout the day on Monocle 24. We'll have updates on the hour, every hour from London. Then Aisha and I will be here live at 2200 hours London time. That's 1700 hours on the East Coast for an Election Day special, Monocle Daily. And if you're staying up all night, don't worry, so are we. The Globalist will also come live from New York, at least part of it anyway. 6 a.m. in London, that's 1 a.m. here in New York. Hopefully it will be all right. We'll then have a quick nap, then be back here for the final Midori House special. Join us tomorrow, 1 p.m., 1300 hours here on the East Coast as we pore over the results. But for now, that's it. If you're American, go vote. I'm Steve Bloomfield.
And I'm Aisha Spears.
Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.